What makes this album a special one for you?
Well, I've been making records for a decade. I think I've got 9 of them out there. This was the first one where I just didn't give a shit about fitting into any category. I mean, to be honest, you know, I think for the first decade of my career, there was a cerebral, you know, process, you know, going into making the records, like, you know, this has to fit in the blues rock category. This needs to turn people on from this camp and this camp and this camp. This time I didn't care, you know, and I think Bowie's passing kind of had to, you know, something to do with that. I remember when he passed and they were posting all these different quotes of his, and he was always a big inspiration to me, not a stylistic influence per se, but just his approach, you know, just really no fear. And I thought, you know, it's time to make a record where you don't give a shit. You know, it's really time to, you know, allow some of the influences that you do have to see the light of day, you know, because, of course, I grew up on, you know, the greats, you know, in the soul, blues, and rock, you know, the Hendrix and the Curtis Mayfield, the Stones, and all that. But on conversely, on the other hand, it's, you know, I grew up with The Clash and REM and The Smiths and The Cure, and that's just a consequence of the time, you know, the times that I was raised in. And it's certainly still music that I really resonate with. So, man, this time I kind of let it all hang out, you know, and got really personal on the lyrical front as well. And I think it made for, like, just a way broader spectrum. It's a more colorful record. It's a more revealing record. And, you know, it feels good. You know, I was worried for a minute. You know, I called my co-producer in the middle of the night and I said, "Is this too personal? am I, is it too much? Is it too much?" And he's like, "Man, it's art and you lived it. Do it." And I was like, "All right, cool."
Do you think that's kind of ironic then that, like, you know, the album's out like a week and then it goes to number one on Billboard and iTunes?
Oh my God. Yeah, like the first time I've ever had a number one, the first time I didn't give a shit. I think there's a lot of beauty in that. You know, and I produced it. I haven't produced my own record for 6 years. I produced my sophomore record, Stage Blues, and since then I've always just handed the keys over to, you know, very well-established producers, and this time I took the keys back, and it is very vindicating to have gotten the number one with a personal, I don't give a shit, self-produced record. You know, for sure.
Oh, man. I have to ask you, like, listening to the album, there's just so many layers, and I really love what you do with your voice. Like, A Night Like This, you reminded me a little bit of Adam Pascal, and, like, Find Ourselves, you had a little Eric Clapton going on. Like, you do so many different things with your voice. Can you just talk about that?
Yeah,
no problem.
I really didn't plan that, but what I do remember is I was like, you know, there's so many different flavors going on here that I really do want to sing to what the song is kind of crying for. You know, so Say Your Prayers really for a muscular, you know, heavy voice. Find Ourselves obviously was screaming for like an Al Green, like an R&B voice. Pleasure and Pain, I visualize that as, you know, being kind of a Mick Jagger, kind of a lot of swagger, snarky vocal. A Night Like This, I mean, I've been a Cure fan since I was 12, and, you know, I'm really glad that I ballsed up and, like, didn't put that cover on the record, because I think that he's a very underrated songwriter. And to take a song like that and kind of strip away the British vocal, you know, which a lot of people consider him to be kind of a whiny British kind of singer, you know, and put a soulful vocal on it. Was that juxtaposed, you know, kind of anyone that was a fan of that music, it will kind of juxtapose like what their, you know, what their memory bank has for that band, and kind of, I don't know, it reimagines the experience. But, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I want to sing every song different. It was just sing to what the song is screaming for. And that's what I did. And the fear there is that when you listen back to the record, that there's no linear thread connecting all of these different songs, but mm-hmm. thank God somehow there is.
Well, and too, I mean, it works in your favor as well, because we kind of live in like the singles generation in a way where like people will try a song and then maybe later they'll try another song. So it's good that they get a different piece of you with every song. And yet at the same time, there's that something that, you know, keeps it all together.
Totally. Totally. And, you know, I'm not one to really, like, once I make the record, like, okay, you know, I don't need to hear it. And it doesn't bother me. It's just, I don't know, I've made the art, I've made it for people, and it's out there. But this week, we've been shooting the music videos for the record, and it kind of hit me, it kind of struck me, you know, kind of how different the vocals really are. We did a video for Lost, and we did a video for Galaxies, and really stoked about both. So
I have to ask you, Butterfly Girl was just a song that kind of jumped out at me. It was just very different from the other songs on the album. Can you just talk about like where that song came from in terms of like lyrics? Is there a story behind it?
you know, Butterfly Girl and Vancouver, I'll say this, you know, they came from the same experience. It was not a good experience, and the songs speak for themselves. And they'll never be played live, and they'll never be talked about. It's all in the song.
I got gotcha.
Like, literally, the story is in both of those songs. It's like a two-part deal right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we all go through that. And you know, I'm thankful for, you know, bad experiences, too. I mean, it's kind of the whole Buddhist philosophy of we gain wisdom and strength through hardship. And it's really true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It certainly added a nice element to the record.
All right, so you're either in the middle of or on like the last leg of a European tour, and then you're coming back to New York City to play BB King's at the end of the month. Have you played there before?
Hell yes.
So what are you looking to do?
I've played BB King's probably 6-7 times. I love that room.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So what do you think is going to make this performance at BB King's different from the other ones? Like, what are you planning to do, aside from, you know, the new album stuff?
Well, I mean, I really approach every show the same. You know, I tour like 30 countries now, and, you know, at least 45 of the states. Man, I just, you know, I bring energy every time. I check my bags at the door, and, you know, my job is to make people feel good for an hour or two. And you know, hopefully they stay supercharged for a while. Like, you know, I really feel that music and art as a whole is very healing to the troubles of the world, you know. So come in, you know, dance like nobody's watching, have some drinks, throw down. And, you know, that's really, I'm kind of emceeing, you know, people to have a good time.
That's awesome. Have to ask, considering, like, I touched upon this before, how, like, this generation kind of downloads singles before they download full albums. If someone has to download one song on this album to get, like, that real taste, and it's hard, like, we've discussed it already with this album, to pick one to kind of get them into the rest of the album, what song do you think they should pick, and why?
Oh, wow, that's a really good question. One song, and why? You know, I would probably, and I'm kind of surprised I'm saying this, but I would probably go with Live From The Heart, because it really does kind of encapsulate like all the elements. You know, it's a song about, you know, kind of remaining optimistic. It has a nice bluesy kind of ripping guitar solo and a soulful vocal, but it kind of has like an alternative kind of skeleton to it. It's kind of almost REM meets R&B.
Nice.
It's kind of like alternative-soul, you know?
I like it.
I would say that's probably a good, you know, piece of bait to put on the hook.
Let's get your elevator pitch. Why should someone download this album or buy it?
Oh man, good God. Why? Why should you buy my record? Because I think I have good stories to tell. You know, I've lived a pretty enriched life, you know, and I always put it into song, you know, what I live, and what I observe. And, there's a lot of, you know, celebrating life, and there's a lot of looking at life, you know, even like kind of sideways, looking at it a little bit different. There's love, there's loss, there's pain. It really is a ride. And I think that, anybody that likes, emotion based music, would dig it.
All right. Give me a song on your iPhone or on your phone or whatever you listen to that you absolutely love, but you're kind of ashamed to tell people that you love. Like, people wouldn't expect that you dug it.
Shit. man, that's like so revealing. Obviously I grew up in the 80s, so like 80s pop, there's a vast majority of it that'll make me gag, but I think people would probably be surprised at how frequently I hit the Tears for Fears record. Nice. Songs from a Big Chair. I love that record. I love Everybody Wants to Rule the World, mm-hmm. Head Over Heels. That's a very timeless record to me.
Absolutely.
And I think it's almost like the 80s pop version of like what Steely Dan used to do, which was catchy songs, mm-hmm. with emotion and with top-notch musicianship. It's a very hard thing to pull together those three elements, catchy, musicianship, and lyrical depth, So yeah, I would go with that.
Awesome. So as you mentioned earlier in the interview, you've been in the business for over a decade. You've accomplished a lot. You've got a ton of work out there already. So what are your goals moving forward after this album? What are some things that you feel like you've got to check off?
I have two major things in the works that will see the light of day next year. I can't really speak about them, and I don't mean to be ambiguous, but they're the biggest things of my career. Very stoked to travel down some new roads and do some brand new things. But with that in mind, and pardon the ambiguous, but my thing is I want to look back on a career that, was very colorful and constantly moving and morphing and evolving. I don't want to just, you're not going to see me put out 30 solo records until I'm 70. I'm going to always collaborate. I'm going to always shake it up. I can always come back to the solo thing. So, stretch out like I did in Royal Southern Brotherhood and then come back and then go and do something else and come back. So that's really what I want. I want to look back on a career that's really moved around and kind of shaken itself up.